And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Annett. No, they'll never keep us down. That's Hazel Dixon singing bluegrass. Wonderful woman. She just passed on a few years ago. She led many of the miners' battles on the front line with the universal language of song. And we're here today like we're here every Sunday. BBS Radio, follow work, murderbydecree.com, itccs.org, the voice of the International Tribunal of the Crimes of Church and State. And of course, tomorrow, Beltane. This is the start of phase two of Operation Atonement. Phase one has been educational forums, teaching people about the common law and the crimes of the Vatican, the Church of England, the United Church of Canada, and other churches. We have a special interview today with a man who is at the heart of the exposure of yet another Vatican crime, the Jasenovac death camp in Croatia that killed nearly a million people. A genocide you don't hear about because, like the one in Canada, it went down the memory hole. The Croatian genocide, actually, the Jasenovac death camp, killed almost as many people as Auschwitz and Treblinka. But, of course, it was buried after World War II because the CIA used that very same Ustashi Catholic militia to bring Nazis out of Europe through the red lines. So, of course, the Vatican and America buried that genocide. But the guest today, and this is an interview I did a little while ago with Dr. Zivanovic, he's a world expert on the Croatian genocide that occurred right out of the Vatican, Pope, so-called Pius XII, good friend of Adolf Hitler, led this campaign to wipe out the Serbs because they weren't Catholics and seized all their land and property. And then a genocide very analogous to what went on in Canada because the aim of these death camps were the elimination of all Serb children. So we're going to have that interview today with Dr. Zivanovic. And the reason we're doing that is to show people on the ground how the crimes of the Vatican are not only historic, but they're continuing today. Because what was discovered in the course of that was the Ninth Circle Satanic Network was operating in those death camps the same way it's still operating today. An announcement on that, there's two very important dates coming up. June 21st to 22nd in Geneva, the World Council of Churches is sponsoring Guess Who? Jorge Bergoglio, a.k.a. Pope Francis, wanted war criminal, who's going to be speaking there about the need for everyone to get back into the fold with the Church of Rome. Because we're all good ecumenical buddies now, aren't we? Well, what's going on in Geneva that very night is, according to our sources, that satanic ritual involving the top WCC leaders, World Council of Church leaders, and the Vatican officials. Now, Dublin, August 22nd to 26th. The Pope is appearing again at a so-called World Conference on the Families. Well, we know that that similar conference that was held in Philadelphia coincided with the Ninth Circle ritual killing in that city. So these are front groups for the operation of the Ninth Circle. We had that from inside sources. And you notice the dates on that, both involving the 22nd, 23rd of the month. Those are satanic high points because they come from a little-known Roman ritual from thousands of years ago. On the 22nd and 23rd of February, that were called the rituals of Terminalia and Ferelia, where children and animals were sacrificed for the upcoming crops, and spring crops, fertility. Those rituals never stopped. They're carrying on today. They're part of the Ninth Circle rituals within the Catholic Church. We have the hard evidence on that. Dr. Zivanovic in the interview today is going to be making some references to the consequences of that that genocide and how satanic ritual killings have been part of every genocide the Catholic Church has been behind. So we're going to be hearing that interview today. And again, to flag those dates, it's been my privilege over the last while to be going around with Operation Atonement groups in a number of different countries. I've witnessed people on the ground in their ones and twos and dozens activating themselves, picketing churches, planning to perform citizen arrests on known child raping priests. And here's another important development. As we're heading into the second phase of Operation Atonement, we are approaching the governments of these different countries and putting them on notice that they are complicit in protecting the Vatican by allowing them not only tax exemptions, but legal and political protection, we're saying there's a consequence for your complicity. You yourself are going to be facing legal consequences for that kind of complicity with a child-killing institution like the Church of Rome. And so we will be offering these politicians a conditional offer of indemnity. That is, if you stand down from your oath of allegiance to the Queen Elizabeth in a place like Canada or England, or you're protecting the Catholic Church, you will evade prosecution by citizen common law courts. But if you don't stand down, you will face the full weight of the law. In other words, the politicians have to be accountable for their actions, just like the insurance companies have to be, the ones that provide insurance protection coverage to these churches. So in other words, Operation Atonement will be expanding from simple actions confronting the church to a broader political campaign to look at the source of the money and the political protection behind these churches and targeting them. There'll be more about that in the coming weeks, and we report some people on the ground about that. But we're flagging that for people now for you to know that this is a campaign that's ongoing, and it's striking at the heart of how and why children are still being trafficked today behind the guise of child protection services and governments and so-called Christian churches. So you can find more about that on our site, itccs.org, writetothecommonland@gmail.com, or the itccoffice@gmail.com to be involved in those campaigns. Now, another point, too, the direct action units that are going to be leading these campaigns, there are manuals, there's protocols that are being followed for training people to take these actions. These manuals can be obtained online. The best one to get is the Common Law Training Manual up at Amazon.com, along with all our other books. Just put my name in, Kevin Annett, and you'll see all the books at Amazon. And finally, one point before we get to the interview. People have asked, coming out of the Common Law Training Manual, I just gave a workshop the other day for a group of folks. They say, what's the best way to go after a big opponent? Well, if you go to page 61, in the Common Law Training Manual, you'll see kind of a summary of Sun Tzu's main points in the Art of War of how you take on a bigger adversary. And it's summarized in three basic lessons. First, when we are few and our enemy is many, we can use the few to strike the many because those whom we battle are restricted, being larger and more unwieldy. Their strength thereby becomes their weakness. We know that from taking on the churches. They can only act in certain ways. We can outmaneuver them. We've done that time and again. So don't forget, the very strength and size of the adversary makes them vulnerable. Second, we never, ever respond to the ground the enemy has prepared for us, but rather we shape their ground. We define the issue, we attack on our terms. They then have no alternative but to respond on our terms, be us, even though we be ever so small. And third, you always hide the time of battle from an enemy. You make what they love and defend your first objective. In the case of the churches, that's their money and their public image. You go after both. You hand out these flyers to the people going into the churches, say, stop giving money to these criminal bodies, and the churches will respond. Believe me, we've learned in practice that that happens. We aim at and seize what the enemy holds dear, and their greater strength and plans thereby become rendered useless. They have to stop and respond on our terms, no matter how small are our forces. Now, that's very important lessons to keep in mind, that we have a great strength by our very size and by the strength of our integrity and moral courage. Those are important points to keep in mind because continually people say, well, how can we fight these big institutions? Don't forget, they are the vulnerable ones. They have much more to lose than we do. So that being said, the rest of the show will consist of the interview with Dr. Zivanovich. And again, this is describing the Vatican-led genocide. But as you're listening to this, the genocide in Croatia, don't forget many strong parallels between what went on in the Jasanovich death camp and the Indian residential schools in Canada and America. In fact, the Vatican operated both death camps and residential schools for Aboriginal people on exactly the same basis, run by Catholic priests, operating under their own unaccountable laws, mass graves that were then hidden with the complicity of the government and the police of these complicit regimes. So After the interview, of course, we're going to end with one of my favorite songs, the Anti-Pope song, which I hope you'll listen to. And we don't apologize for the language, because if the F word offends you more than the fact that children are being killed now, you have to look at your own values, folks. So we hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back again live next Sunday. And here's the interview with Dr. Zivanovic. I thank you. Stay strong. Stay clear.
Hello, and it's an honor for me to speak today with Dr. Zivanovic, world's leading expert on the Vatican-led genocide of Serbs and others by the Catholic Fascist movement in Croatia, 1930s and 40s. Dr. Zivanovic is an eminent scholar who participated in the historic excavations at the Jasenovac death camp in Croatia, whose findings had been suppressed by various governments. Dr. Zivanovic, welcome to our program today.
Thank you.
We are especially happy to have you with us today because of the strong similarities between the genocide of non-Catholic people in Croatia and of Aboriginal people here in Canada. Both of these genocides have been concealed and removed from the history books. And it's an indication of how effective this concealment has been that most of our listeners, no doubt, have little or no knowledge of the crimes that you have documented in Croatia. So could you please begin by telling us today about the crime that was inflicted on the Serbs, the Roma, and the Jews by the Vatican and its Ustaši movement? What happened and why did it happen?
I can tell you one thing. First of all, I must say that I am the chairman of the International Commission for the Truth on Jasenovac. Prior to my appointment, there was Professor Bernard Klein from New York in the United States. He was the chairman of the commission, and I inherited his position when he died. I started to examine the atrocities of the Roman Catholic Church and Croats who were educated or prepared by the Roman Catholic priests and Roman Catholic teachers to hate everybody who is not a Roman Catholic, primarily the Serbs, who were Orthodox, Jews, and Roma. I started to study these problems prior of my going to the Jasenovac concentration camp and to Donja Gradina, which was a part of the Jasenovac concentration camp. I was taught by professor of forensic medicine from the medical school in Zagreb, Croatia. He was a communist, and as a communist, he was imprisoned in Jasenovac and spent the whole war there as an expert studying what was happening, but at the same time, he was just an inmate of that concentration camp. His name was Professor Ante Premeru. The hate of the Roman Catholic Church in Croatia didn't start at the beginning of the Second World War. For centuries, the Roman Catholic Church fought against Serbs because they were Orthodox and they were in their way in their expansion to the East. We know that Crusaders never went to get the freedom to the grave of Christ, but to destroy the Orthodox Byzantine Empire. That happened long, long ago. And the same thing happened in Austro-Hungarian Empire. Many people now do not know or do not remember that Croats, the Roman Catholic Croats, started to execute Serbs long before the First World War, there were many, many such moves, not only in Zagreb, which is the capital city of Croatia, but also in many other places in Austro-Hungarian Empire. The same thing happened between the two wars, because the Communist Party of Yugoslavia made an agreement with the Croatian nationalistic Ustasha movement to destroy the Serbian Orthodox Church and the Serbian Orthodox population. And that agreement was signed, I think, in 1939 or before that, doesn't matter. In any case, before the Second World War. The agreement was signed by an eminent communist leader called Moša Pijade from Belgrade and from Mile Budak, who was vice president of Croatia during the Second World War. So they made an agreement to destroy the Serbian nation and the Serbian Orthodox Church. The interesting thing is that Jasenovac concentration camp was never liberated and it was never attacked by any communist unit during the Second World War. It wasn't liberated because Croatian soldiers moved out of Jasenovac at the end of the war, and approximately a week after that, the first partisans came. But during the communist dictatorship in Yugoslavia, all the traces of the camp were destroyed and removed, so that nobody could see anything what was happening at the site. In 1964, when we came to the site to excavate the mass graves at Jasenovac on the left side of the river Sava and in Donja Gradina on the right side, on the right bank of the river, we found only swamps and places where they planted maize and such agricultural plants, and that was all that could be seen. But fortunately, the Department of Forensic Medicine of the Medical School in Ljubljana in those days got a special drill, and they drilled the land, and when they managed to find out some remains of the bones, we knew where the mass graves were. And then we opened some of these mass graves and counted the number of victims buried there. And we found out that in a natural grave, that means on two square meters, there were 27 individuals approximately. So that was the average number of victims, and we knew that they managed to bury between 800 and 1,000 victims in one mass grave. Then we counted the number of mass graves which were dispersed on an area which was 12.5 kilometers long and 4.5 kilometers wide. Now we know that mass graves can be found on a much larger area. So you can find the mass graves of the victims on an area which is long 37 kilometers, but that was found out by aerial photographs and by the use of these some modern physical instruments. Most of these mass graves have never been excavated, but I must say that I was watching cadavers from Jasenovac camp floating down the river Sava and into the river Danube for months and months. I can always remember a case when I was playing with my little sister at the bank of the river Danube, when a cadaver of a woman who had a sort of red pullover on herself was pushed out from the river onto the bank just at the place where we were playing. And I can never forget that, the view of that cadaver. Later on, when I was excavating in 1964, together with a team of forensic anthropologists, I decided to speak for those whose silence will last forever, because they can never say what happened actually to them, what happened to them actually. Unfortunately, after that time, I had the opportunity to interview a very large number of the victims of the Jasenovac concentration camp. And the International Commission for the Truth of Jasenovac managed to find out that more than 730 Serbs were executed in the Jasenovac concentration camp, 23,000 of Jews, not 33, as some of the books say, and 80,000 of Roma. And we have descriptions of these mass murders of these poor victims. In one of my reports at one of the international conferences on Jasenovac, I described the basic 20 methods of killing that they used in Jasenovac concentration camps. I also visited some of the concentration of the German concentration camps, for instance, Auschwitz and such places, and I saw that Germans used to kill their victims in a sort of an industrial way, without torturing them. But Roman Catholic Croats used to torture their victims very, very much before they executed them. And the Roman Catholic priests wrote in their diaries, which were found after the Second World War, about the victims which they raped, when they raped them, at what place, and how they killed them, and where they were buried. So all that they wrote in their diaries, and we could find that quite well. For instance, one Roman Catholic priest, after the mass in his own church, said, "Look, Croats, go and kill all the Serbs, but first of all, kill my own sister, because she got married to a Serb. And after that, come back to the church and I will release you of your crime, and you can be the true Roman Catholics after that. We also know that the main Roman Catholic leader, the Archbishop of Zagreb, who was the head of the Bishop's Conference of Croatia in those days, and the main military Archbishop of Croatia, Alojzije Stepinac, wrote in his letter to the Pope that he managed, or that his priests managed, to convert into Roman Catholicism 240,000 Serbs. When we were excavating in 1964, we were not allowed to take any pictures, and no journalist was allowed to write about our work at all. When we finished our excavations in Jasenovac and Donja Gradina, and when I came back to Belgrade, or better to say to Novi Sad, which is just 50 miles from Belgrade, I found out that I'm persona non grata, and I had to emigrate from Yugoslavia of that day. That was Yugoslavia, because I would lose my job and I would probably be imprisoned, because I learned something and I knew something that the communist government of the day didn't wish to be known. And that's how I ended up in Central Africa, just 5.5 months after my work in Jasenovac and Donja Gradina. I think that the Roman Catholic Church and their priests and their nuns managed to kill many, many non-Roman Catholic children, because Croatia was the only country in the world that had a concentration camp for extermination of non-Roman Catholic children. That was the only state in the world that had such a concentration camp. In the first part of that concentration camp, there were children aged from birth to 1 year of age. And in the second part were children between 1 and 4 years, and so on. In any case, the International Commission for the Truth on Jasenovac found out that in the Jasenovac system of Croatian camps for extermination of Serbs, Jews, and Roma, more than 110,000 children below the age of 14 were executed. The main executors of small children were the Roman Catholic nuns. Some people cannot believe in that, but many, many witnesses said that, and I know that many of these Roman Catholic nuns confessed after the Second World War what they actually did. And many, many children were found in mass graves. We found out that the mass graves in the Jasenovac part of the concentration camp were those victims who were imprisoned in more than 1,100 places in the independent state of Croatia. They were robbed during their imprisonment and came without any possession to the Jasenovac concentration camp. On the Bosnian side, in Donja Gradina, on the right bank of the river Sava, victims were brought directly from their villages and from the small towns to the mass graves, and they were executed and pushed into the mass grave together with all the things that they possessed. And there we found a lot of some of gold coins which were hidden in their clothes. We found the Jewish stars or crosses and such things made of gold or silver. And all these gold and silver we measured carefully and gave to those who organized the excavation. And after that time, I don't know what happened to that gold. I think that it was stolen, God knows by whom, but in any case, it disappeared. So the Roman Catholic Church was the one which organized all these things. I remember that at one meeting of the International Commission for the Truth on Jasenovac, which was held in New York, I don't remember now in which year it was, but in any case, Birnbaum, who was an expert from the United States, he reported that more than 1,400 Roman Catholic priests in Croatia themselves committed crimes. That means they were killers of Serbs, Jews, and Roma. Later on, the International Commission for the Truth of the Jasenovac found out the names of 1,371 such priests, not 1,400 as the Americans have. But the Americans managed to get hold of German archives after the Second World War, and so they had much better information. I also studied a number of reports written by German military officers during the Second World War who reported to Hitler and his government what was happening in Croatia during the Second World War, and they were appalled by the atrocities that the Roman Catholic priests and the Roman Catholic Croats committed during the Second World War. At the same time, there were reports by the Italian officers who reported to their superiors and to their government about atrocities. Some of them were surprised to see how serious were the crimes committed against innocent Serbian population, because Croatian peasants used to kill their neighbors, Serbs, just to get hold of their property, of the food that they stored and such things, and try to move into their houses and to live there, and that's why they killed them. The same thing happened with Croatian intellectuals, with students of the secondary school, with students of the university, they were those who were committing crimes even against their own teachers. They used to rape their own teachers and professors who used to teach them and to teach them properly. But they were Serbs, they were Orthodox, they were Jews, they were Roma, so they killed them at the same time. But the main organizer...
Doctor, excuse me for interrupting, but could you tell us the role that the Pope played, the direct ties between the papacy in Rome and these crimes? You mentioned the Archbishop. Can you tell about the evidence you have implicating Rome directly?
Yes, I can tell you that as well, because when the worst racialist laws were passed in Croatian parliament, all the bishops and all Roman Catholic priests who were members of that parliament were present, and also the Pope's representative, Marconi, was also present at that meeting when they decided that everybody can kill any Orthodox Serb or any Jews or any Roma without having to answer for that crime. And anybody could rob them, rape them, and do whatever they like. And the Serbs, Jews, and Roma were forbidden to go along a pavement of a street, but they had to walk along the middle of the street like cattle. And there were many notices that Serbs and dogs cannot enter certain premises and so on. They made special ghettos for Jews, for Serbs, and for Roma, and so on. And Roman Catholic Church knew that quite well. At the same time, the Archbishop of Zagreb, Alojzije Stepinac, wrote a letter to the Pope claiming that they managed to convert 240,000 Orthodox Serbs into Roman Catholicism. So that was one thing. The other thing was that they used to convert Serbs into Roman Catholics, into Roman Catholicism, and then to kill them because they knew or they believed that they will go to heaven as Roman Catholics and not go to hell as an Orthodox or a Jew and so on. So these were terrible things. And now we have a witness from Jasenovac, who is living in Australia, who saw himself, Alojzije Stepinac, the Archbishop of Zagreb, how he is slaughtering a Serbian child. And there are many, many such cases. I cannot tell you everything in a short time. But in any case, the Roman Catholic Church knew quite well what was happening. And the Archbishop of Zagreb, Alojzije Stepinac, used to take the murderers and killers from Jasenovac to Vatican to meet the Pope, who blessed them.
Thank you. Could you also describe how they went about killing people, especially the children?
What they did to small children, the Roman Catholic nuns used to poison them, to use the caustic soda to spread over their mouth, and they used to die in severe pains. they also forbid the children after the 6 o'clock in the evening to pee or to do whatever they needed to do over the night. And if any child did anything during the night, that child was killed, because they used to smash their heads on the walls of the premises where they were held. And all these walls were covered in blood at the time when Jasenovac was liberated at the end of the war. So that's what they did. They used to kill those children, they used to starve them, they used to expose them to cold weather or wind and so on. And the winters were very, very strong in those days. So that's how they used to kill the children.
Thank you. Can you describe your efforts to bring this truth to the world and how it's continued to be censored and stopped?
The problem is that testimonies from Jasenovac and all the reports and discussions from the first conference on Jasenovac, which was held in New York, was forbidden. In the United States, there was a decision by the court in the United States that all these books should be withdrawn from libraries and destroyed, and that nobody should know what was happening in Jasenovac. But we managed to publish these reports outside the United States, and we try to distribute that to the libraries throughout the world. At the same time, I must say that we had 6 international conferences on Jasenovac, which were held in New York, in Jerusalem, and in Banja Luka in Bosnia and Herzegovina. And all the reports and all the discussions were published in English and in Serbian language and distributed to the libraries everywhere in the world. So the truth about Jasenovac is well known for those who wish to know it. But unfortunately, we are talking now about something that happened 75 years ago. And the people who are now 75, they were born after the Second World War, and they know nothing about all these atrocities. And the Croatian government and the people in Croatia and Vatican and the Roman Catholic Church don't want the truth to be known to anybody in the world. They wish to cover up all these atrocities.
Now, I understand that some of the people involved in the Ustash and the Croatians and the Vatican were involved in smuggling Nazis with the Americans out of Europe after the war. Do you think that might be why the American government is trying to conceal this crime?
Of course, they try to conceal the crime, but there are still some victims who openly say what happened to them. And there are many researchers, I know, for instance, some of the researchers from the United States who are interested in this matter and who came even to Bosnia and to Jasenovac to see what actually happened. And they wrote about that, but who is reading these books? Because that's history. People are not very much interested in all these things. I myself try to write the books and try to give lectures, and I'm going around the world giving lectures about that. But the number of people who are listening to me is a very limited number, except maybe in United States. Last year, I gave a lecture in United States where 250,000 people were present. I was standing at the top of a hill with a loudspeaker and spoke to them, and they knew nothing about that, what happened in Jasenovac. That was on the 4th of July. It is the American holiday on that day, one of the national holidays. And all of them came to Libertville, where I spoke about atrocities of the Roman Catholic Church and what actually happened to Serbs, Jews, and Roma in Jasenovac concentration camp.
What kind of work needs to happen today if there was to be another excavation and investigation into these crimes? What kinds of things would you like to see investigated?
I always say that the truth about the number of victims can be found 120 centimeters below the surface of the earth. So if anybody doesn't trust the International Commission of Experts from four continents about their figures, they can dig and find out themselves, but they can find out only those victims who were buried in mass graves. But what about the victims that were thrown into the river Sava and floated by the river Sava into the Danube and down to the Black Sea? We shall never know the names of these people. We shall never know the names of the people who were cooked for making a soap. But you can still see the place and what they used for making the soap from cadavers of these poor victims. They are still there in Donja Gradina. We shall never know how many children were cut out, unborn children were cut out from the wombs of their mothers and killed in front of their mothers. And we shall never know how many people died of hunger or because they were exposed to winter colds and winter winds and such things. How many of them died of various diseases and infestations. So it's very difficult to find out the true number. There was a number of statisticians who used for their statistics the data from 1931, which were the true data, and then they calculated how many people would be born and so on, how many of them disappeared, and then they found different figures. But you cannot trust any of them because they simply don't know. They don't know how many people were buried alive. They don't know how many people were burned down in crematoriums. So I only know that two wagon cars of dust was found from those victims who were taken out of mass graves and burned by Croats who wished to cover up their crimes and that was done from 42 and throughout 43 and 44. They used to take many, many cadavers from mass graves and burn them down. But how many of them they were burned, we don't know. So I don't think that it would be an easy thing to find out the true figure at the end. But the International Commission who studied archives, German, Italian, Croatian and other archives, and also the excavations which were done in Jasenovac and Donja Gradina, then they came out to a figure of more than 730,000 Serbs killed in this Croatian system of concentration camps.
Professor, I want to thank you. This was the first part of a series of interviews I hope we can do together, but I want to thank you today. It's been an honor to speak to you, and I will speak to you again very soon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thank you all the listeners.
All right, this is the last thing you're going to hear tonight. It's a happy song, but it's got its complicated words, so just listen really hard. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a fucking motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a total motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck him, fuck the motherfucker.